Hey, everybody. Welcome to our latest episode of this Vasculitis Visionaries podcast. We are excited to be back with you once again, even though it is kind of a crazy time to be alive. That is putting it mildly, I think. I'm Ben Wilson. Kelly Bynes is, as always, along with me for this podcast episode. It's actually going to be a two-part episode. So this first part you're hearing is our continuing interview series that we're doing. And we actually have a duo today. We'll have a couple different interview guests that we're going to talk with at the same time. And there's a simple reason for that. It's because they are married, but they are both physicians. And that is Nancy Anderson and Mark Anderson. If you've been a frequent follower of the Vasculitis Foundation and some of the different awards or just newsletters in general, you've probably seen just a brief glimpse of their story, because the VRED Award that was given out last year was given to Dr. Mark Anderson. We're going to tell you a little bit about why that happened. I know, Kaylee, on your end, I'm sure it's been cool to see this whole story and kind of just how it applies to medicine as a whole and our whole process of trying to diagnose patients better. And, you know, you think about the fact that these are doctors we're going to talk to, one of whom is a patient, one of whom helped diagnose said patients and kind of did it in that within that prism of being family and a spouse and everything. So a really unique and interesting story. And I think our general hope here, I'm sure you agree with this, is that we're hoping that these kind of unique stories become more of the norm, right? As more is known about these diseases, and we can do a better job of early diagnosis. But needless to say, it's really inspiring to see what these two have been able to do in their field, and also just as it relates to diagnosis within vasculitis.
Absolutely. And I do actually want to circle back really quickly. I believe Nancy is a nurse who has a degree from Boston College, and Mark, Dr. Anderson, is a physician from Dartmouth Medical School. So just to separate it there, they're not both physicians, but they both are in the medical field. And it is, as Ben mentioned, really interesting that, you know, they happen to have that connection and be able to, as Ben mentioned in our first episode, really recognize that this is more of an issue, that these type of symptoms are consistent with vasculitis, and push for that diagnosis, whereas I think people less familiar with the medical field are less able to do so. So as Ben mentioned, I really think getting the word out and talking through VRED and really what the Andersons have been able to accomplish in terms of Nancy's diagnosis will really help the medical field in terms of what to look for in vasculitis.
Yeah, absolutely. And those two, they met in Boston. So it's something that they've been able to kind of to track together. And yeah, of course, I'm the one with the journalism degree, Kaylee, and yet I still mangled that. So good. You're the one who's just in these times. You're the one who's monitoring everything and making sure I'm actually on the right track here. It's been cool to see, and having read their story a little bit and being a little bit familiar with the background on that, I am curious to just hear their perspectives on things. I know personally for me, Kaylee, with my parents both being physicians, it's kind of that unique balance as well with some of the things, and I know my parents have worked on trying to increase education in their own part of the ER field on that thing. So I'm also kind of curious to hear how, especially in a profession where it's as I'm sure you've heard a lot of your friends in the field say, Kaylee, it's like, you know, you hear about these sort of diseases maybe once during your training and that's it. And I'm curious now, with kind of hearing from their side of the experience, how much more of that type of talk has kind of filtered down into people in their profession, because it is something that has gotten lost a little bit in the shuffle, and understandably so, with how many different intricacies there are in medicine and what they study. But that's something to me that I'm curious to hear about on their end.
Absolutely. I think they really are going to be able to speak to that in a way that's really helpful for our listeners.
No doubt. So I'm looking forward to this. I know Kaylee is as well. We have Nancy and Mark Anderson coming up. We'll bring them in right now here on the Vasculitis Visionaries podcast. And let's now bring in Nancy and Mark Anderson, our guests we just told you about here on the Vasculitis Visionaries podcast. So Mark and Nancy currently joining us from Orlando today as we record. Guys, hope you guys are doing well right now. It's kind of crazy times, but we really appreciate you joining us. And it's funny, as Kaylee and I were talking about this earlier, as we have ramped up this podcast in the first season of having all these episodes, we've had a variety of really cool, different guests from around the medical profession. And of course, we're bringing in a husband-wife duo for the first time. So you guys, it's an honor for us for you guys to both join us. It's our first duo interview we're getting to have. So welcome.
Thank you. Thanks. You for having us.
Yeah, and it's an interesting story and the background you guys have. We were just setting a moment ago in our intro, Kaylee and I were, with the VRED program. I know we wanted to mention that, of course, and how, Mark, you were named the winner of that award for last year, and the things you guys have done in the medical community, just kind of going towards the whole diagnosis process that, Nancy, you had to go through. It is just so interesting to see how all of those things unfolded. And I guess that's just where I wanted to start. I know a lot of medical professionals in general and patients alike are always interested just about that whole process, right? How you go from initial symptoms to eventual diagnosis. And it always seems, no matter who you talk to, whether it's a doctor, a patient, anybody involved in that process, that it is different for everybody. And it's hard to really know what steps necessarily to take or how those things all break to the point where, you know, you finally get a diagnosis. So I wanted to start with that and just get your perspective and thoughts just from that part of the journey and how everything worked, where you start to feel bad, Nancy, and Mark, you're trying to figure things out as a husband and also an internist and a little bit of experience in the medical field as well, and trying to sift through all those unknowns that come with just vasculitis in general. So I'm curious how that all started for you guys and just the path that you've been on.
Mm-hmm. For me, originally I started with pain in my feet and numbness and some tingling and some swelling in mostly my toes and under my feet bilaterally. And started with podiatrists and orthopedic surgeons. And that went on for probably, I think, close to maybe 8 months to a year. And I was at the point where they were going to actually schedule surgery to take a nerve out of my feet, thinking that that was the problem. And I, thank God, ended up canceling that. And then eventually, and woke up one day from literally one day to the next with bilateral severe pain in my wrists. Starting more in one wrist than the other, but still significant in both wrists. And it got worse by the day from there. And I did see more orthopedic surgeons, neurologists. I had two EMGs. I had every type of blood work drawn, which essentially came back negative. And I saw a vascular surgeon. I think I saw approximately 12 to 14 physicians before it was all said and done. And what happened was I started to feel nerve pain in my chest and my abdomen. And it was getting more and more severe and really terrifying. And eventually, my husband was able to do all the research and asked a neurologist to please draw the specific labs, one of which included the ANCA titers, which came back positive. And then from there, we went to Boston at Mass General, where we both had been working years ago and have connections, and we were able to see a rheumatologist there and then eventually a neurologist. And I was treated with rituximab. And I've done actually quite well. I had rituximab, four infusions total, 2 infusions 6 months apart. And I've been very lucky because my symptoms, for the most part, have abated. And I do occasionally get some pain, but nothing in comparison to my early pain. And I've learned to understand my body a little bit better and know that I do get a little bit of waxing and waning, but it's been a learning process to understand the disease and its manifestations and whether they're actually severe or, you know, needing immediate treatment, or whether I should wait a little bit of time and see if they get better. So I'm still in the learning process phase because it's only been a short period of time since I was diagnosed.
Wow. I think that's a story that a lot of the patients, as Ben and I have mentioned in previous episodes, are fairly familiar with, is just really waiting for that diagnosis and seeing all these professionals. You said 12 to 14, which to me is mind-boggling. I think I only saw 5 and I thought that was a lot. And something that I'm kind of curious about is what your opinion on the type of physicians you see and how that could dictate your diagnosis. And Dr. Anderson, feel free to jump in here as well. Just because I think for me, I noticed that, you know, my rheumatologists were much more willing to look for these type of symptoms because this makes sense to them. This is something that they study and they're familiar with and they treat. Whereas a lot of my other doctors, such as my renal specialist, you know, this wasn't the first thing that popped to their mind just because it wasn't something that, you know, they were as familiar with. So do you think the type of doctors you saw dictated some of your treatment and diagnosis to start with? Do you think that would have been different if you had seen different doctors? I guess, how do we unravel this mystery of misdiagnosis for patients?
I don't think that, actually, you know what? I did see a rheumatologist early on, very early on, and she did not pick up on my symptoms. She sort of sent me back to the orthopedic surgeon and thought that maybe there was another issue. So that was really unfortunate because that was a really huge missed opportunity. She was very busy and I think just did not, I don't think she was really privy to my presentation. I didn't think she understood that that could be a presentation for vasculitis, because it is, my presentation was very rare. I think very uncommon.
Sure.
Well, I think, you know, initially when with her, like a lot of vasculitis patients, I imagine you have a certain symptom. And so you're driven to a physician that you think would be the best person to deal with it. Like we went to a podiatrist because of her feet. They thought it was, they gave it a diagnosis of metatarsalgia, maybe, you know, some sort of, you know, just a focal neuropathy, and they were, you know, going to excise the nerves. There wasn't a sense that this was something more general.
Systemic, yeah.
Yeah, systemic.
I think it was really hard for people to make that jump that this was actually a systemic illness.
As we went along, we followed the primary symptoms, and then, you know, did all the usual things. You know, did the EMG, did the basic labs to rule out lupus, you know, rheumatoid arthritis, went to the rheumatologist when it became involved in her hands. She had the MRIs, she had EMGs, nothing showed up. And basically, because there was no specific, you know, heralding symptom that triggered something in them, even the rheumatologist, we were just told, you know, we don't know what it is. We'll have to see how it plays out. Wait till your nerve, you know, your nerve conductions and your EMGs change. You know, in other words, when you have more damage, before we can, you know, make a diagnosis.
And I think another thing too, that through not only all these other physicians, but, you know, but my husband also and me, was that I did not have the inflammatory markers like an elevated SED rate and a CRP, you know, which I think a lot of patients do have. And so I think, again, I was an outlier, and it, you know, that really threw them off, because I think that would have obviously made them think of a systemic illness rather than a focal issue.
Absolutely. So do you have any recommendations? I know this is a really tricky disease and it is so rare and it is underdiagnosed, but do you have recommendations of what doctors should be looking for in terms of patient presentation or in terms of patient symptom description? Just because I know a lot of the things, especially as we discussed earlier, our pain is, you know, it's hard to really put that into any sort of symptoms that match up with the disease. So, you know, do you have recommendations for people who are potentially trying to get diagnosed with some mystery illness?
And I think my husband can speak to that, but from a patient's perspective, and also as a medical professional, in addition, the first thing is, I just think that doctors have to be careful to not be dismissive, because I think that patients, if you listen and if you read between the lines, often they'll give you the answers, you know, in regard to what you're looking for. And I think that it really comes down to being more, doctors are busy, but they've got to continue on with lab work. They've got to continue on, you know, being a detective and trying to look for, get beyond the basic things and look into the details of, you know, just keep trying. But I think that's hard also in the world we live in the medical world that we live in, where everybody's pressed for time and cost containment, et cetera. So I think it's hard. And I think Mark can really speak to that too.
Well, yeah, no, I think number one, the diagnosis is challenging. The symptoms are pretty nonspecific early on. And the key is diagnosing patients with vasculitis, as you know, as early as possible before you have the sequelae that may be permanent. And so at that point, though, your symptoms are frequently not fitting a common pattern. We used to, in my internal medicine training, we always, way back when, we talked about the great imitators, the diseases that could imitate a variety of things. And, you know, in the old world, it was syphilis, then it was tuberculosis, then sarcoidosis, then Lyme disease, all these nonspecific things that need to... Yeah, chronic fatigue syndrome, all these things that need to, you know, be considered when you really reach a point where you don't have a diagnosis, when you're really frustrated. But as Nancy pointed out, medicine has become more time constrained. It's more transactional with the electronic health record. You have even less actual, you know, physician or healthcare provider contact with the patient. So if you don't fit into a simple diagnostic category that is nice and neat and clean, you're not going to get that extended thought process that needs to be done. You know, Nancy was my wife, and I was very, you know, I knew something. It just didn't make sense. You know, I mean, so I pored over the literature that I could find. I went, you know, on the internet. I looked at protocols. I looked at we were basically going with a diagnosis of peripheral neuropathy. So going over again and again the differential diagnosis in the labs, and I finally, it was so frustrated, I listed every obscure one that might be related, and I asked this one neurologist who was not, frankly, helpful clinically, but at least he could order the labs, and he did. And that was what ultimately came up with the elevated ankle level, which as soon as we got that, we had a pretty good idea what was going on finally. We're able to, you know, get the treatment started. Mm-hmm. So
I think, you know, again, I understand the position of that the physicians are in now, with cost containment and time factors and so on, but it's looking for outliers and it's really digging deep. Like Mark said, to go beyond, the basic things and take the time to do the real searching for the obscure illnesses, like by going literally just through an algorithm of, like he said, peripheral neuropathies and going way out on the fringe to see what else would cause that. And that's how he found it, by going out further and further to, you know, what would cause peripheral neuropathies. The next question we're going to ask is, you know, what would we suggest for patients who are in the position that we've all been in, where they've been to multiple doctors and haven't been able to get an answer and getting sicker and sicker. And was that your next question?
Hey, it's pretty open-ended. So however you want to direct it.
I know that's one of the things we wanted to discuss. But as a patient, I would say that, you know, don't give up. Don't take what they said to me, which was, you're going to have to just live with this basically until you get sicker and we have more information that can lead us to some sort of more a diagnosis. And particularly with this disease, that's, you know, potentially, you know, life threatening for sure. So I would say don't give up and don't say, okay, I'll live with it till I get sicker. Keep searching. And most importantly, when people have these diseases, which are not easily diagnosed, is to go to a teaching or an academic center or tertiary care center that has seen more obscure diseases. And that's always our recommendation when people contact us with something obscure, is, you know, to go to those centers, because that's where they see it and that's where they study it, unlike your physician in the communities. Would be our biggest recommendation.
Yeah, and I think obviously they need to see their primary care doctor to start out. Maybe they can wean it down to one symptom or one body group. And then knowing that, then the mechanism, you know, basically what department to look for a referral to. You know, for example, with Nancy, we honed it down to a neuropathy. And then we were going to see a neurologist who specializes in peripheral neuropathies, you know, in Boston. So that was kind of how, you know, we were able to hone it down.
I mean, obviously everybody's going to see their doctor, you know, gatekeeper doctors. But what my point is, once you've seen several and you're still not getting the answers that you need, then you're going to have to go to a place that might be more knowledgeable about things that are less common.
And from a medical perspective, I don't really know, other than changing drastically medical education, but somehow the diagnosis of vasculitis has to be triggered in the minds of these clinicians. And at least in Nancy's case, with all the physicians that she saw, once we had the diagnosis, I contacted each one of them and let them know this is what her diagnosis was. This is out of the box. Please think of this next time. At least there was a positive, there was a feedback. Otherwise, they just go on their day and they would have never known that they actually missed a diagnosis that was unusual. But maybe they'll file that in there. And these are pretty, you know, these were handpicked physicians that we saw. Maybe in their memory bank now it'll be triggered. Maybe that'll come up. So I can only hope.
And the other thing that is, you know, on a really positive note, I spoke to a friend of mine yesterday and she was excited because she told me that her son was learning in medical school about ankylosing, which some of the med students I have spoken to recently have been studying it. But back when Mark went to medical school, that, you know, it wasn't as prevalent. So
not as prevalent. And the ones that the patients that we saw, at least in my career in anesthesia, were the patients who had, you know, severe GPA and EGPA, you know, both Church Strauss and Wegener's. But those are the patients we clinically would see in the OR having bronchoscopies and so on. So I knew about it in that way, but getting the whole picture in medical school, again, it would be, you know, great to at least get the new generation focused and oriented to it.
Right. And I know, Nancy, you had mentioned earlier just the whole concept that you're kind of in a, you're like the exception almost with some of your symptoms that you showed. And it's kind of speaks as a, in a general sense, just to how all of us really as vasculitis patients. I mean, if you really look at it on a broader scale are kind of exceptions, and it makes it so that's where the whole diagnosis part of things come in and make it so different from everything on our end. And you look at like the three of us here who have been diagnosed, Kaylee with GPA, and I have EGPA, and you have MPA, Nancy. So it is kind of interesting how this has all kind of come together. And the thing I've always wondered, and like for in my own case with my parents both being ER physicians, and that's something as you were kind of touching on earlier, Mark, it's just so hard to like have that just that instinctual thought, right? To somebody comes in maybe short of breath and maybe in an ER sense, you're not going to immediately jump to a conclusion of severe disease or something like that. So I guess the question from here, it's almost like, you know, on paper, it's one thing to say, all right, we need to be having this more in terms of a maybe med school curriculum or teaching people to at least go that extra step and start to think about it. But I kind of wonder practically what sort of things do you think are the next steps as far as making that more of a reality? Because I think, you know, I feel like from at least talking to my parents on this side and some of the other medical professionals we've talked about, it's always such a slow process just because we have ways we think about medicine that have been ingrained for just so long. So I'm curious what sort of things you've seen change over the last few years, what sort of things you've talked about with your colleagues in the profession, and if you think those can have a difference as we, you know, continue to fight this and as those progressions are continuing to be made.
Good point. You know, I was basically, after I did internal medicine, I went into anesthesia, doing cardiac anesthesia, because I enjoyed taking care of critically ill patients in an acute environment. And so I was always dealing with very sick patients. But in terms of where the screening needs to occur, where that first step needs to be occur, really that needs to be at the primary care level, you know, either internists or in the case of kids, pediatricians, family practitioners, yet also like your parents, you know, they have contact with patients in, you know, on the front lines in the ER. Those are the main, you know, the screening areas that it needs to be, I don't know if publicized is the right word or educated. Again, it's a very nonspecific diagnosis. You know, we're trained in medicine to, you know, like you, I think you quoted it in your little email, or Kaylee, you did, you know, when you hear hoofbeats, you think horses, not zebras. But they need to think about the zebras if the horse beats are not fitting the diagnosis. You know, common things occur commonly, and there's production pressure to move people through. And so you're going to, you know, just by the nature of our work now, you're going to be, you know, inclined to go with your initial diagnosis and the common diagnosis. Now, there's so many, you could analyze it with all the levels of bias and cognitive issues that occur with clinicians, you know, anchoring, which means you stick with your first diagnosis, or you try to find the simple one, Occam's razor, you know, which, you know, basically says it's usually the simplest diagnosis. So to go beyond that process, to think out of the box, you know, requires it just a different thinking process. But I don't know, Nancy, what do you think?
Well, no, I just wonder, just in the conversation, when internal medicine, and Mark, you probably know, but when they go to their yearly meetings or the conferences that they have, is there somebody in, you know, family practice or internal medicine or pediatrics that's lecturing on this specific disease? You know, I don't know the answer to that, but I just wonder how much attention it gets at those national meetings. Obviously, in the areas of, you know, rheumatology, et cetera, I'm sure they are discussing those. But when it gets down to, you know, like I said, the first point of contact being, you know, a family practice or internal medicine or a pediatrician, is this subject being, you know, discussed.
Right.
At these national meetings.
That's a good point. You're right. It's a good point to make up. I with your experience in the nursing field, Nancy, and Mark, as we've talked about being an internist and everything, within your own personal experiences now that you've gone through all of this, and I think we all have our own, at least in our immediate bubbles, right, after you get diagnosed, there's people are going to think of it a little bit differently because it's obviously on the radar. But from a professional standpoint, how have you seen just people in your immediate professional circle who deal with medicine and are obviously curious about stuff like this? What's been the reaction to that? I mean, have you seen a change in the thinking at all since you've gone through this journey?
You know, I don't know if I can really speak to that because even though with my background in internal medicine, I don't have an internal medicine practice. I haven't really, other than keeping up with the literature, I can't say I've actually had discussions with other internists, you know,
I just went to see a new internist the other day, and, you know, I don't know whether he would have picked up on my situation, but he certainly seemed to be fairly well versed in it. And in addition, Mark, you just told me about somebody else that was I think in family practice who had made the diagnosis on one of your patients that had come to you for anesthesia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's true.
So I mean, I think I agree with Mark. I don't think that we've really had that breadth of experience with other internal medicine or, you know, doctors, but I think maybe in the younger group of physicians, the teaching has, and the medical school teaching has probably become more significant. But I will say that from what we see and the doctors here, you know, and they tend to be maybe a little bit older, but we really haven't seen a whole lot of interest or, but I think it's going to be really, it's going to be the younger physicians now that take an interest in something like these diseases.
I always laugh because I have an undergraduate degree in biology. So a lot of my friends went into the medical profession. And right. Whenever they introduce me to their friends and say, oh, by the way, she has ANCA-associated vasculitis, they all get very excited to meet someone from the test, but in real life. But I do think that your points about making sure to go back to professionals and telling them, hey, this is what the diagnosis ended up being, and doing that follow-up, I think health as personal and health as that connection is really helpful, and I think really is going to help turn the tide in the ways that you were mentioning. Another thing just that I would love to get your input on when we talk about health as personal, I know right now a lot of people are pretty concerned about coronavirus, COVID-19, what it means for the medical community. But for our community, we're considering what it means to be immunosuppressed and to be dealing with these type of risks. So I would love to get your input on if you think anything has changed for you or for any of your professional contacts, or if you think right now, you know, we don't really understand it fully. But I'd love to just get your input on that because I think that's something that's on a lot of people's minds, especially in this community.
Yeah. Well, my feeling is that everybody should be, not just our community, but I think everybody should be taking all the appropriate precautions. And, you know, I think people really need to understand that. And I'm not sure that the general public fully understands this. That's kind of something that we've been discussing in our house lately. And, you know, because, you know, you may go to your hairdresser and your hairdresser is working in one of those single cubicles, you know, it's okay to go ahead and see your hairdresser, or your hairdresser can come to your house. But what people aren't understanding is that that hairdresser in the last week has seen 70 people. So now you've seen those 70 people also. So I think people maybe aren't completely understanding the contagion and the exponential spread. Yeah. So yes, everybody that has our disease, of course, needs to be isolating themselves. But if everybody doesn't do it, it really doesn't help us all that much. So I'm just, you know, right now I'm trying to gently tell people that they really need to consider everybody who has any disease process at all. And I just think everybody needs to err on the side of caution at this point. So we're not going out. We're not doing any of those things. We're pretty much staying put as best we can.
But to answer your question specifically, you know, I did look that up, you know, the variety of organizations, you know, American College of Rheumatology, the Hospital for Special Surgery in New York, which has a lot of rheumatologic patients, you know, pretty much absolutely, if you're immunocompromised from your medication, particularly steroids, and some of the other, you know, Cytoxan and Imuran and azathioprine, methotrexate, you know, you definitely are at more risk for an infection. And presumably, and there's no data, your response to an infection would be more severe. So just it basically, yes, you need to have a higher level of concern. And really the recommendation that makes sense is to have a close relationship with your primary doctor who's managing your medicines. Maybe you can cut back on them. Maybe you wouldn't do that unless you got symptomatic. I know that it's interesting that one of the drugs that they found useful in China was chloroquine. They use that in combination with Keletra, which is a HIV medicine, and found some improvement. And they've basically been able to duplicate that in France and England. So you may be seeing patients placed on chloroquine or in our population, not necessarily with vasculitis, but with rheumatologic issues, Plaquenil, which is hydroxychloroquine, may have a beneficial effect. So we'll see how that plays out in the next, you know.
You're saying if they become ill with this virus.
Right. And yeah. You definitely would not want to take somebody off Plaquenil because it may be beneficial. You know, the idea of a vaccine, that's at least a year in the future. So, you know, again, I think the main thing is to, you know, have a relationship with your physician. If you do get sick, you go to the hospital, make sure they're very clear on what you've been on. And common sense stuff.
Yeah, it is a good point you make that just because, like, us in this room sitting here, we're obviously all already cognizant of it because we have these, you know, rare conditions, and so we're on that so-called high alert, but it really should be what everybody is doing at the same time. So it's a good point you make as we wrap up things here. I want to thank you guys again, Nancy and Mark, for coming on. I found this really interesting just to get your perspective on things, both on the patient and medical side of it, just the journey that you've gone on, Nancy and Mark. You've obviously been there just about every step of the way as far as trying to help out with the diagnosis and everything. And it's kind of that two-way street you have to go on. You have to have the support of your medical team, as we all know, as patients. And at the same time, and it's a big reason why we've embarked on doing the podcast this year, is medical professionals, too, they want to know what we're also going through as patients, because it can kind of help out on their end with the research. And it's kind of this ongoing thing. So I feel like for our purposes and in the community as a whole, this has been really beneficial today. I feel like it's been great to hear your guys' story just in this longer podcast format. And I do feel like and you guys touched on it a little bit, just as we try to increase the education about everything, have this spread more to especially with younger physicians and some of the curriculum there. But it does seem like we're on the right direction. So I want to thank you guys for coming on with us today and for being a part of our podcast.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for having us. Good luck, guys.
Yeah. Thanks to both of you for all you're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
For patients.
And thank you so much. We really appreciate your time.
All right. Stay safe. Take care.
You too.
Absolutely. So we will be back to wrap up in just a moment. But again, thanks to Nancy and Mark for joining us. We'll be back with our little postscript wrap right after this. Okay, it's Ben and Kaylee now. Again, thanks to Nancy and Mark for joining us on the Vasculitis Visionaries podcast. As I had mentioned, and thank them, Kaylee, I know you, I'm sure, felt the same way. Really informative discussion with them, and then just, you know, a unique story in general with how much they've been through, just from a couple's standpoint and how they've been intertwined as well in the medical community. I'm sure there are a lot of interesting things for you to take away from that as well.
Absolutely. I think I really appreciated their perspective about health as something personal, because I think that it's really easy to get into the weeds of diagnosis, the weeds of research, but it's really helpful. And I think all the visionaries that we talk to do a great job of this, but focusing on the people that are affected and how to really make the change there. So I really appreciated that perspective from them.
Yeah, that's why it's called Vasculitis Visionaries, Kaylee. You're on brand there. It's very professional by you in the broadcast.
I'm learning. You're teaching me.
Yeah, you know, we're making steady progress. We are. And yeah, you're already better than I am at this anyway. So so it's all good. As far as what we have to come still, and as we mentioned at the top, this is the first part of a kind of special two-part episode. I know that, and again, we talked to them a little bit at the end about all the virus stuff and things happening with it being kind of a unique time right now. Our podcast, as we've mentioned, Kaylee, is more geared towards, we're having a lot of medical professionals on, people with experience in that field as well. I know we also, though, want to get some thoughts from a lot of our close friends who have this disease or within the community. And so we're going to plan on doing that for the second part of this episode, kind of to get that perspective. And as we touched on a little bit earlier, it also goes back to how medical professionals, people working on this, they can also kind of learn from us and our own experiences as we go through a lot of this stuff. So we won't give away everybody who's going to be on, but we're going to have a nice little panel to just kind of talk open-ended and just go through all the things that we're experiencing with right now as it relates to having this virus sort of sweeping the nation, and also how we're handling that as immunosuppressed patients who are obviously on the high alert to begin with.
Absolutely. And I think this is kind of a special treat for physicians, if I do say so myself, because these are the sort of things that patients, immunocompromised patients like us, are talking to each other about all the time. And so it is kind of that sneak peek into what do these conversations between patients really look like. So I think it'll be a really great opportunity.
It's a good point you make. And with that, we should also mention it's a good way for us to talk about one of the other podcast series that the Vasculitis Foundation has on its docket, and that is our good friend Sarah Amodio, who does the Ride podcast, and that is more geared kind of centrally, and I've been able to listen to some of those episodes, and Sarah does just an awesome job with a lot of patient-centric discussion. So that's something that she does a lot, and she does a great job with all of those different episodes they do, but that's kind of where we had a little bit of the thought, right, is to kind of expand that onto ours, just for this sort of special circumstance episode, I should say, with everything going on. So that's something to keep in mind as well. But for now, I think that'll wrap up this episode, Kaylee. Been a lot of fun. We'll chat with, again, like I said, not going to give away everybody, but it'll be a fun little panel. Be tuned for our next episode, the second part of this Vasculitis Visionaries episode, when we do talk with some of our own colleagues and fellow patients within the vasculitis community. Of course, want to thank one more time Nancy and Mark Anderson for being our guests on this episode, and for Kaylee for being the great co-host that she is, as always. I am Ben. For now, we'll say so long and see you next time here on the Vasculitis Visionaries podcast.